I'm glad you're here with us. We're going to start our service tonight worshiping. We're going to start that in a few seconds. Just want to kind of fill you in on a story and where we're headed tonight. There was a guy who totally loved his wife. Loved his wife more than anything. And he decided, I want to do something that will communicate to her how much I love her. So he thought about it for a while, and he took a couple weeks. After all that time, he realized his wife has always loved small dolls, and she's collected small dolls, but she had nowhere to put them. And through all the time that they've been married, she really had nowhere to put these dolls. So he came up with the idea that he would build her the ultimate dollhouse. So his wife would come home from work, he'd give her a quick kiss, and right down to the basement to his computer. And he spent time researching these dollhouses. What would be the best dollhouse to build? Where would he get the plans? How would he go about setting up all the different things inside the dollhouse as far as wallpaper, painting, all the accessories that would go into it? Then he ordered the stuff, and every day he would come home, give his wife a quick kiss, and right down to the basement start working on the dollhouse. He could not wait to show his wife how much he loved her when he gave her this dollhouse, because he knew this is what she needs. She's got these dolls. She's going to love this. The whole process of him in the basement, coming home, giving his wife a quick kiss, getting down to the basement, working till dark, till it was bedtime, took 14 months. And after those 14 months, his wife came home one day, and he had had it, the dollhouse brought up in the basement, put it in the living room, and he says, I want to show you something. And she said, yeah, I want to talk to you too. And he said, oh, that's great. Well, come on in the living room. He goes and he pulls back the big sheet on the top and says, look, this is the dollhouse that I've been building you for 14 months. He said, now, what did you want to say? And she said, for 14 months, I have felt totally unloved, and I think we need to go to counseling or divorce court. And he was stunned. How does something like that happen? How does a man who's trying to show his wife how much he loves her wind up with that kind of response? Well, that's where we're headed tonight. Because this is something we're going to study tonight and find out what happened to this guy and how can we prevent such a thing happening in our life. I've asked the band to take us through some worship songs in the beginning, so I'm going to hand it off to them and take us on into our worship, Dave.
All right, gang,
with school back in full swing and a summer of rest and relaxation behind us, I felt compelled to embark on a new course of Bible study. We are now 47 weeks into the Times 2 campaign that God set us on last year. And after tonight, we have only 5 more Saturdays that we have left until we reach our finish line, which will be our 16th anniversary service, which you just heard about. So I've been seeking God's guidance, asking him, what does he want us to accomplish in these 6 weeks as kind of our finish line? How does he want us to sprint that last bit on in? And the answer to that inquiry of God is really this 6-week Bible study that we are going to start tonight. The series of studies that we're going to look at all stemmed from conversations and pastoral counseling that I have been a part of for 2 decades. You see, in that time that I've met with people and talked with them and listened, it became clear that there are a few common denominator issues that trip a lot of us up. Several commonly shared potholes that cause our lives to become unhinged and eventually feel like life is crushing us. Now, I went back and forth with our series title, starting out with a very academic title try of Life 101. But, yeah, I know. And I decided after I looked at it on paper, I said, no, that's not it. So then I thought maybe it should sound more like a reference work. I like reference work. So how about the Handbook for Living? Yeah, when I looked at that on paper, it seemed that promise a bit more than I could really deliver in 6 weeks. So I settled in on who I am, and I went for a more earthy, more street-level kind of series title. Are you ready for it? Stuff You Need to Know. This is stuff you need to know. I'm telling you, this is stuff you need to know. I think that works best because the stuff that we're going to learn in the next 6 weeks, you're going to come back to me and say, this is stuff I needed to know. I know. I learned it over the past 20 years. So there are things that really we should have been taught in our lives from the very beginning that we were never taught. Things that really were imperative. And I mean really imperative. Imperative to making life what God intended it to be. Maybe I should explain it kind of like this. Think of a five-year-old child sitting at the bottom of a long, tall hill. And this hill has a dirt path running up that hill, but that dirt path is filled with rocks. And this five-year-old child is sitting on their bicycle at the bottom of the hill with their helmet on. And I'm standing next to him. And the bike is facing right up that hill. He's on a flat bottom. He's facing right up that hill. He's taking aim up that tough path. Well, you know me. I'm telling that child how they need to get to the top of that hill without crashing. And I'm giving them good advice on just how to do it. Well, the kid is raring to go. He is gripping the handlebars. He is clenching his teeth. And I'm standing next to him. And I'm patting him. And I'm giving him bucket loads of encouragement and bucket loads of faith that this kid's going to make it to the top. And then just when before the starter pistol goes off, he turns to me and says, hey, Pastor Drew. I said, yeah, what? He goes, I don't know how to ride a bicycle. Well, friends, that's how a lot of us walk through life. We're trying to run the Tour de France, but we don't even know how to pedal. So, if you have ever asked yourself, why do I feel like life is fighting against me all the time? Well, in this series, it's for you. If you've ever asked yourself, why is love not working in my life? This next 6 weeks is for you. If you've ever asked yourself, how come people always dump their problems in my lap? This series is for you. If you've ever asked yourself, why does my heart feel unfulfilled? And why do I feel restless and searching for something? Well, this search is for you. This series is for you. And if you've ever asked, how did my life get here? And is there any hope of it getting out of here into something better? Well, this series is for you, and I want to make you a couple promises right now. I promise you, if you come each week for the next 6 weeks, you absolutely will learn something important that you didn't know. I promise you that. Over the next 6 weeks, if you apply even one of the truths to your life through the power of the Holy Spirit, your life will change for the better. I absolutely promise you that. So, enough intro. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. Psalm 139, verse 14. Thank you, Lord, for making me so wonderfully complex. Your workmanship, God, is marvelous, and how well I know it. Bible students, this verse tells us things. This verse tells us that God created us marvelously. It's wonderful. It's good. And it also tells us that we're complex. That means that we're created great by God and that we are also multifaceted. And the way we each of us are created is elaborate. And one of the areas in which God made us multifaceted is in our communication. That means how we give and then how we receive, our reception of love. Dr. Gary Chapman has revolutionized our understanding of one of God's wonderfully complex items in each of us, and that is our ability to communicate love. Everything we will learn tonight comes from Pastor Chapman. He deserves all the credit and all for this enlightenment. Let me go right and put that right on record. You see, looking in the Bible, we find five different ways people communicate, that means give love, as well as five ways that we receive love, those same five ways back. That means That means, first of all, God did not design each of us to love exactly the same. It means God has devised 5 methods for us to show or communicate love towards someone and also to receive and feel love back by someone. Every one of us has been wired by God with a majority bent to love and feel loved through one of these methods or languages. Pastor Chapman called them the 5 love languages, and this was quite brilliant. These methods of communicating love actually serve as either a native tongue to us that we're fully in sync with and understand and communicates wondrous amounts of love to us, or it's more common a method or a language of love that's being conveyed to us that's nothing more than a foreign language. We can't comprehend it. It makes no sense to us at all, and it leaves us being, has the love uncommunicated to us that was trying to be communicated. You see, each one of us expresses love for someone, whether it's a parent, or expressing love to a sibling, expressing love to a friend, a spouse, a child. We express love through one of these love languages. But what's also true is that we hear and receive love from that same dominant love language. So if 2 people are wired by God differently in their love languages, the I love you that may be trying to be communicated may not get heard. That's how someone winds up spending 14 months building a dollhouse only to wind up hearing from his wife that she didn't feel loved at all. So let's dive right in and look at the 5 methods of communicating love that God has designed. Now, I want to use an acrostic for this, so it'll be easy for you to remember these. And the acrostic we're going to use, since we're at church, we're going to do something really cool. We're going to use a Greek word, and that's going to be the word agape, which is self-sacrificial love. Agape, A-G-A-P-E, and it's on your outlines. You have one of these love languages, so be looking for it. First love language starts with the A, acts of service. Well, where do we see that in the Bible? Oh, Luke chapter 10, verse 38 through 42. It says, as Jesus and the disciples continued on their way to Jerusalem, they came to a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. Now, her sister Mary sat at the feet of Jesus listening to what he taught. But Martha was distracted by the big dinner she was preparing. She came to Jesus and said, Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here while I do all the work? Tell her to come help me. But the Lord said to her, my dear Martha, you're worried and upset over all these details. There's only one thing worth being concerned about, and Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her. See, in this passage here, we see Martha showing her love expressed through the language of service. She is doing something for someone. She is making a gourmet meal for Jesus. That's going to be how she shows him she loves him. Another example of this would be King David. King David loved God. He loved God. And he said to God, I'm going to build you a house, God. You've been living in a tent ever since. That's all you had was a tent. I'm going to build you a house. I want to do this act of service to build you a house, which Solomon wound up doing. David was not allowed to do that. Gang, the person who communicates love by acts of service is an incredibly industrious person. This person does not need to be asked to take out the garbage. They take it out a day in advance. The acts of service person can be found helping their neighbor fix their car. They can be found putting a new roof on someone's house. You may find an acts of service love language person shoveling someone else's snow or taking their dog for a walk. These acts of service love speakers pick up around the house. They organize a messy area. They do the laundry because they love who they're doing it for. Acts of service people clean their spouse's car without being asked. They build their wives elaborate coffee tables and make their husband's sock drawer look like a Macy's display rack. Acts of service people try desperately to get you electricity when you don't have a generator. And they're the first to show up at your hospital room. The acts of service love language tells people they love them by saying, "Let me do that for you." These people work tirelessly to provide for their families. And in their mind, they are saying, "I love you," with every second of effort that they put out. And they do it gladly. They in turn feel loved, and they hear, "I love you," when people do something for them. They can't get over that. They feel loved when a friend shows up to help them with a big outdoor project without being asked. They feel loved when their secretary leaves them a cup of coffee on their desk. They feel loved when the sink has been emptied and the dishwasher is running. Anything that took effort or sacrifice or toil communicates love loud and clear to the acts of service wired person. God, in his wonderful, complex wiring, wired one of my brothers with this love language. I'm very familiar with an acts of service person. I'll say to my brother, "What do you got going on today?" And he'll say, "Oh, it's great. I have a neighbor of mine who has a friend, who has a cousin, who's moving. So I'm going to go spend the day helping them move all their stuff in my truck." Wow. You must be wired for acts of service. Is this starting to sound like someone that you might know in your life? Is it starting to sound like you? Well, write that person's name down on your outline and keep that there as an example. I have my example. Okay, our next love language is G, gift giving. Where do we see it in the Bible? Acts chapter 9, verse 36 through 39. There was a believer in Joppa named Tabitha, which in Greek is Dorcas. She was always doing kind things for others and helping the poor. About this time, she became ill and she died. Her body was washed for burial and laid in an upstairs room, but the believers had heard that Peter was nearby at Lydia, so they sent two men to beg him, "Please, come as soon as possible." So Peter returned with them, and as soon as he arrived, they took him to the upstairs room, and the room was filled with widows who were weeping and showing Peter the coats and the clothes that Tabitha had made for them. Westbridge, the gift giver speaks through thoughtful gifts. When they go shopping, their eyes are always open for what someone else would really like or enjoy. And what is important to point out is that the gifts, they don't have to cost anything at all. The gift giver can use an object, a card, a letter, a flower to communicate, "I was thinking of you because I love you." Gift givers love to pluck flowers from the side of the road and make their own cards for people's birthdays. They write poems and they present them to you, or they give you a stone that they picked up on a path and carried for miles and couldn't wait to get to you to hand it to you as a sign of love. The gift giver looks at these tangible objects and they feel that they're giving them is an expression of their love. They thought about you through the entire gift procurement process. An inanimate object like a wedding band becomes a priceless possession because of what its giving communicated. Therefore, the gift giver is seldom seen without the precious expression of love firmly nestled on his or her finger. Now, the key to knowing the difference or recognizing a gift giver from an acts of service is the gift giver emphasizes the object rather than any effort or any service that it may have cost them. When we started the church, we had only probably been around for 2 years, and a lady who had been coming to the church came to me one day, and she handed me a package, and it wasn't any my birthday or anything like that. She just handed me this package, and she smiled, and she left. And when I got home, I opened it up, and it was this incredible shirt. It was beautiful, like mint green, cream in the middle, this really heavy bowling kind of shirt, you know, and really beautiful, embroidered all over. I have that shirt to this day. It's probably the most expensive and best shirt I got. And this lady just handed it to me. And I said to my wife, I don't understand. Why did I get this present? Why did I get this awesome looking shirt from her? And my wife says, because she loves you. And she wants to tell you that by giving you that shirt. She's a gift giver. I said, oh, tell her I like cars. So now, do you know any gift givers? Because if you do, jot their name down on your paper. It's important to know. The third love language that God designed is another A, and it is what we call ample time. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 17 and 18. Dear brothers and sisters, after we were separated from you for a little while, though our hearts never left you, we tried very hard to come back because of our intense longing to see you again. We wanted very much to come to you. And I, Paul, tried again and again. You see, the ample time person feels loved through face-to-face interaction. It doesn't need to be taking them out to a fancy dinner. It merely needs to be time spent with the individual. It doesn't need to be spent gazing into each other's eyes longingly. It can be two people bowling. Ample time children feel loved when they have the opportunity to tell their whole day's adventure to someone. Or if they spend time playing a board game on the floor. Ample time friends merely need to spend a lunch together at McDonald's or go to a movie to express the idea that they're loved. Togetherness and quality conversation are the two main staples in the love language of ample time. Now notice here that where the acts of service person and the gift giver spent almost no time at all in their expression of love, that's not the case with the ample time person. The ample time person needs bucket loads of availability and accessibility. You see, the love tank inside an ample time person will need very regular and frequent fillings to feel loved. Now, the gift giver may receive a gift once or twice a month and feel loved, but the ample time person's love tank will be running on fumes very quickly if they do not have regular face-to-face interaction. Do you know anyone like that? If you do, put their name. Maybe it's you. Jot your name down as an example. Number four, love language, the P. The P in agape stands for physical touch. This is non-sexual physical touch. Luke chapter 7, verses 36 to 38. One of the Pharisees asked Jesus to have dinner with him, so Jesus went to his home and sat down to eat. When a certain immoral woman from that city heard that he was eating there, she brought a beautiful alabaster jar filled with an expensive perfume. Then she knelt behind him at his feet, weeping. Her tears fell on his feet, and she wiped them off with her hair. Then she kept kissing his feet and putting perfume on them. You see, the physical touch love language communicates love through the touch on someone's arm, through the placing of your hand on their back, from a hug for a greeting. It's important to emphasize that this person's love language is communicated through simple physical touch. The physical touch person wants to cuddle with no thought of moving on to anything else. Children wired with the love language of physical touch long to sit on their parents' lap. They love to hold their parents' arm or grab a hold of their dad's neck. This love language is communicated through the brushing of the arm as they pass by you in the kitchen. This love is communicated through the tussle of the hair running off a little league field. And love is understood loud and clear through the holding of the hand or the arm of a dear friend. The physical touch person steps up behind a loved one and massages their shoulders, communicating love with every single squeeze. The physical touch child leans on the leg of their parent and squeezes their way under their arm so that they can feel loved when sitting on the couch. My daughter, Katie, when she moved to Nashville, she rented a room from a family that we knew down there, and they have three children. And their littlest one was named Colin. And Colin took a liking to Katie right away, and he's only about four. Every single time Katie gets home, Colin will run to her and want to sit on her lap. When they're watching TV, Colin has to sit right next to Katie, and he will always pull her arm around his shoulders. When he goes to sleep, he wants his head on Katie's lap. Colin is not clingy. Colin is communicating love. Do you know anyone like that? Jot down their name as an example of the physical touch love language. And now we get to our last love language, the E, encouraging words. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verses 4 through 5. Timothy, I thank God for you, the God I serve with a clear conscience, just as my ancestors did. Night and day, Timothy, I constantly remember you in my prayers. I long to see you again, for I remember your tears as we parted, and I will be filled with joy when we are together again. He says, I remember your genuine faith, for your faith you shared first came from your grandmother Lois and then your mother Eunice. And I know that same faith continues strong in you. Here, what's happening, Paul is pouring out encouraging words, isn't he, on Timothy. The person with the love language of encouraging words communicates love through verbal affirmation and praise. And those encouraging words have great power. Mark Twain was one of these. He said once, I can live for 2 months on a good compliment. The encouraging words person communicates love by saying, honey, you look beautiful tonight. They communicate love by saying, you are my hero. And you did a great job on that project. Those are all statements of love in the encouraging words love language. The speaker in this love language seems to never miss the details of people around them that they're doing. Thanks for filling the car with gas. You're so thoughtful. No one cooks as good as you, Mom. That looks beautiful. You built that? Boy, you're very talented. Gang, those with the encouraging words love language are offering others valid expressions of love with their words and honor and commendations. Those wired with this love language long to hear who they are and what they do is noticed and that it matters. They are proficient verbalizers of love. You know anyone like that? Put the name down. So the big question tonight that you need to know and you need to answer, the big question is this. Which one of these is you? Which love language is your primary means of hearing and communicating love? Because you see, we start to understand our relationships much better when we identify the expression of love that we long for and the expression of love others need to hear love in. Back to our original story. Man spends 14 months building a dollhouse to communicate love. And in the end, the wife is brought to tears because something's wrong. What happened? What would you say his love language was? Acts of service. He was going to build her the most beautiful thing in the world. What do you think her love language was? Ample time. She got no time with him. He was busy doing the service. They both wanted love to be expressed, but they were just speaking a different language that the other couldn't understand. Friends, the thing that we need to know is that God designed love, and he designed it so we would love differently. He designed it so that it would take effort on our part. So you and I must learn the love language of those around us. And then we have to learn to speak that love language. If your wife is a gift giver, then bring her little things. Does your husband need to hear encouraging words? Start speaking complimentary things to him. Does your friend need ample time? Then carve out time for them in your schedule. Does your relative thrive on acts of service and come alive when you do something for them? Then look for ways to do something for them. Or is your daughter wired for physical touch? Well, then hold her hand and walk with your arm around her all the time. 1 John chapter 3, verse 18 tells us this. Dear children, let us stop saying we love one another. Let us show it by our actions. God is telling us, you and me, we need to start studying some foreign languages. You need to know that love language of acts of service. You need to become fluent in gift giving. You need to understand and speak ample time, physical touch, and encouraging words. You and I need to be fluent in each other's love language, so when we need to show love to someone, they hear it. They hear it loud and clear. After all, communicating love is incredibly important, so much so that we are told they'll know we are Christians by our love. As the band returns and our worship leaders and our prayer group comes back over on this side, I want to just give you a couple warnings here, quick warnings on these love languages. One of the things that we tend to do is we will discount a love language that we're not really wired for. I had a friend at the firehouse that I was talking to about this, and he says, well, there's really only four love languages. I said, why do you say that? He goes, that encouraging words. That's just blowing smoke up people's rear end. I worked at a firehouse. So I said to him, really? He goes, yeah, that's no good. I don't need anybody to say nothing nice about me, and I don't say a whole lot nice to one another. I said, well, it's too bad you're discounting that, because guess what? That's my love language. Ooh. We tend to discount the ones that we're not wired strongly for. It's easy to discount, well, you don't need a gift. It's easy to say, I spent enough time with you. We have to be very careful not to discount love languages that we're not really prominent in. The second thing I would offer as a warning is this. Beware of speaking the anti-love language. What this means is that you can, by not speaking a love language properly, you can communicate that you don't love someone without trying. The dollhouse guy, because he gave his wife no time, it communicated to her, he doesn't love you. If you speak discouraging words to someone who needs encouraging words, that's going to feel unloved. They're going to think you absolutely do not love them. Be careful of the anti-love languages. Gang, we are beautifully and wonderfully made, we are told. But it only feels that way when we understand how God made us. So tonight, you have homework. After the service, ask your friends and your loved ones, what's your love language? Find out. Because I assure you, This is stuff you absolutely have to know. Would you stand? One week down. We're going to keep going next week with more stuff you need to know. I encourage you, bring a friend. What do you do when other people keep dumping problems on me? How much of it do I own? How much of it should I help? What's my obligation? What's my responsibility? We'll handle it next week. Sound good? That's where we're going. We're going to spend our last 5 minutes just talking with one another, enjoying each other's company. We're not going to break down up front. We're going to wait 5 minutes, just talk to everybody, enjoy each other's help. Also, the prayer team is over here. Maybe you've gotten some things wrong in the love languages. Maybe you have been communicating an anti-love language, and you know what? You need some prayer to cover it because you're going to go try to make some things right. Well, I would encourage you, come see us up here, and then get ready to go out and do the hard work that God calls us to do of learning to be bilingual. Thank you, Lord, for allowing us to be here. I pray that you would help us, Lord, to continue to do what you called us to do. And now, Lord, keep us safe as we head out and give us our time where we connect with you and we connect with one another. Amen.